Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Listener, do you ever feel vulnerable in your own home? Waking up in the middle of the night, going to get a drink or use the bathroom? Those little noises your home or your apartment makes, little creaky noises that might startle you. I think about that sometimes, about that irrational fear. But what if those fears became true? Statistically, someone listening right now has likely dealt with a break-in. That is something I do think about a lot, especially when working on this show. I want you to keep those fears in mind for today's episode. Those fears are going to be very, very relevant. And while I have your ear, while you're sitting there listening to me, I have your full attention. I want to let you know that this episode features extreme sexual violence. So, if that's something that bothers you, you might want to dip out on this one, because this episode has a lot of that throughout the episode. And you know, if I'm warning you, it's going to get heavy. Now, with that said, let's get on with it. October 1990, Orlando, Florida. Heather Claypool is sleeping. It's early morning hours. A small creak stirs her. Between squinted eyes, she scans the side of her bed. It was probably just someone downstairs. She lives in an apartment. Heather drifts back to sleep. Another creak. She sits up. There is a man crouched at the end of her bed. "What are you doing here?" she asks the shadowed figure. The sun hasn't yet risen. It's dark. This man crouched before Heather's bed is her nightmare incarnate. The man stands up. "I don't want to hurt you," he told her. He takes off his pants and isn't wearing underwear. "Hand me that pillow." The man climbs atop Heather, pressing the pillow to her face, and in the morning dark hours of her apartment, he begins to rape her. Heather can hear the man crying. He's weeping, and he's repeating the same phrase again and again. "Don't look at me. Don't look at me." Heather lays there silently. The man gets up, pulling on his pants. To her shock, she watches as he climbs out of her bedroom window. She can hear the steps rattle as he climbs down a metallic ladder. Heather waits for the sound of steps to fade. She closes the window, and then she calls the police.
Welcome, listener. I'm glad you're here. Take a seat next to the fire.
Welcome to Obscura, where we shine a light on the dark.
October 2nd, 1991. 28-year-old Denise Collins, an aspiring artist, is spending the evening with friends. the group sit around the apartment talking and listening to CDs. One of her friends is an ex-boyfriend, Gary Boudou. Denise went to high school in Titusville and attended colleges in Boston. She got a job at Kinko's in Orlando after earning a fine arts degree, but she dreams of one day becoming a graphic artist. Denise made arrangements for this visit with her friend, Sandra Hughes, on that same evening. She arrived at Hughes' house at 8 p.m. Hughes and Denise had dinner and were subsequently joined by other friends, ex-boyfriend Gary Boudou and Linda Hartman. Denise had recently returned from a short stay in Boston, where she had resumed a romantic relationship with Boudou. The two had been dating on and off for over a decade now. They were high school sweethearts at one point. They couldn't quite seem to fully split, but they also couldn't quite stay together. Gary even had a key to her apartment. Gary stayed the night with Denise three times in the past week. Just the other night, there was a strange occurrence. Denise was folding her clothes in the room when she heard Gary calling to her. She started walking towards the bathroom when she noticed the noise was coming from her balcony, from beyond the sliding glass door. Something cold ran down her spine, like someone walked over her grave. Denise approached the glass door and then began to open it slowly. In a phone call to her mother later, she would admit that she felt foolish for feeling so afraid. Denise checked out the balcony. There was no one there. But curiously, there was an aluminum ladder leading to her balcony. Was this maintenance? Gary came out of the bathroom drying his hair after a shower. "What is it?" he asked. "Nothing," Denise replied. Denise left the gathering alone just before midnight. She saw the want in Gary's eyes, but chose to ignore it. Hartman and Gary left Hughes' apartment and went back to Hartman's house. After a while, Gary left Hartman's house and started his drive towards Titusville for the night. Was he lonely? It's hard to know. Andre Lee lived at the same apartments as Denise. The two didn't really know each other. Exchanged a few words here and there. He lived in the apartment above her. Lee left work at 10 p.m. the evening of October 2nd, 1991, and went straight home. After entering his apartment, Lee adjusted the back blinds of his apartment window. There was someone standing out there. He couldn't understand what the man was doing in the back lot. Oh well, not his business. Lee got in the shower, turning it on, and resolved to focus on relief after a stressful day. Something is bothering him. That figure outside. Something about him standing there seemed insidious. He couldn't quite put his finger on it. Drying off, Lee peeks through his blinds again. The man hasn't moved an inch. Lee got dressed and, pulling on his socks, he decides that he's going to see what this guy is up to. Opening his apartment door, he starts his walk towards the back of the apartment, asking himself why he's doing this the whole way. Lee spots him. He's of average height, bald, a little overweight, and black. The man is staring at something. An aluminum ladder leading to the apartment window below his. It stands about 3 feet away from the man and 6 feet away from Lee. The man turns and looks directly into Lee's face. "What's up?" he asks. Lee stands there for a moment, and then he turns around. He decides whatever's happening, he doesn't want to be a part of it. Now left alone, the man starts his ascent up the ladder. He gets to the balcony, climbs over it, then to the glass door. It slides open. He knew it wouldn't be locked. He checked it the other day, after all. Denise exits her bathroom into her bedroom, and immediately something feels off. For some reason, the room is cooler than usual. Denise ignores this feeling and gets dressed into her nightwear. She climbs into bed, closes her eyes, and sleep slowly envelops her. Denise wakes to the sound of her closet door opening. She opens her eyes. There's a man standing there. Startled, she tries to scream, but he is on top of her with his hands over her mouth. The man strikes her face once, then twice. Tears of both fear and anguish pour from the 122-pound, 5'4" woman's eyes. He tells her that he is going to take his hands off her mouth, but if she screams, then he will kill her. He releases his hand from Denise's mouth, but then he places a vice grip on her shoulder, with his fingernails digging into her skin, enough that contusions and cuts form. Denise has her clothes ripped from her body by this awful man. He holds her down, with his forearm pressed into her throat, and he begins to rape her. He's weeping. He's telling Denise, "Don't look at me. Don't look at me." When he's finished sexually assaulting her, the man starts pulling on his pants. He stands up, turns his head, and there she is, looking at him from across the room. This is when he begins to beat her. Full strength punches, haymakers, throwing Denise throughout the entirety of her apartment. From the blood spatter, it's clear that the process was not quick. His knuckles left cuts and contusions. Denise held on to consciousness. The man would not let up. He had no mercy. Her skull was fractured multiple times through blunt force. There was blood covering the walls, the bed, the carpet, and many items strewn throughout the room indicating a wild struggle. A medical examiner would later state that if she were rendered unconscious immediately, perhaps this crime would not have been so hideous. At 4 a.m. on October 3rd, 1991, an Orange County deputy sheriff was dispatched to the Carousel Apartments. When the deputy arrived at the apartment, fire rescue was already there waiting at the door. The deputy found the door to the apartment slightly ajar. The deputy opened the door to the apartment and yelled out that an Orange County Sheriff's Office deputy was at the door. Was anyone there? And there was no response. After a couple more yells, the deputy began hearing some moaning sounds, as if someone was in pain. The deputy then entered the apartment, and in the looming dark of the bedroom, observed Denise lying nude on the floor. Denise sat up, and through her broken jaw, she could only moan. And that's when the vomiting began. Gouts of blood poured from her mouth. She was covered in blood and then fell back into a semi-conscious state. Rescue personnel showed up to begin aid. Denise started rocking her head back and forth, and grunting, as if answering to some unknown question. While strapping her down, she sprung up to a seated position and then slumped forward. They tried to push her back down again, and she began to vomit, losing blood in gushes. Heroic efforts were made to save her life. However, after fighting for 12 hours, Denise died at the hospital. Listener, are you interested in merch? I get merch requests all the time. And so I'm announcing these specialty handcraft mugs called the Shadow and Light Mug, exclusively crafted for fans of Obscura Podcast. You'll have to check them out yourself, and I don't want to waste too much of your time. But if you want these mugs, head to our Patreon. There's a public post, and you don't have to be a member or anything, but you have to see these mugs. They look amazing. They are handcrafted and from Indiana, and they have the Obscura label branded on there. This mug looks like an old discarded thing in the best way, like something found at a crime scene. You'll have to check it out. It's sold at a great value. So if you want to see these mugs, if you want one for yourself, if you want to be a part of the Cool Kids Club, head over to patreon.com/obscura. And it's one of the first posts on there. It's open to everyone. They're called the Shadow and Light Mug. Back at the scene, Deputy Sheriff Tittle inspected the apartment to find if there was anyone hiding inside. While inspecting the apartment, he found that the glass door leading to the balcony was left slightly open. Deputy Sheriff Knight also responded to the crime scene to process evidence. He was informed by Deputy Tittle that there were some ladder mark impressions under the balcony that was found open. There were fresh semen stains found on the sheet of the bed. Deputy Knight cast the indentations with dense stone material. He also examined the front door of the apartment and the sliding glass door from the living room to the balcony. He observed no signs of forced entry on either door. Deputy McLeod also examined the entrance door and the sliding glass door and found no signs of forced entry. McLeod also removed the bed sheets from the bedroom of the victim for processing. The deputies found out the next day that Denise Collins languished for some time in the hospital as a result of her injuries, before ultimately dying. During that time, Deputy Sheriff Gay requested that Dr. Blakely take semen samples on the victim. Deputy Gay was present when Dr. Blakely took the semen samples from the victim on October 3, 1991. After the samples were taken, Deputy Gay sealed the samples in a bag, and then he took those to a refrigeration unit at the sheriff's office, pending transportation to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement Crime Lab for analysis. The following day after the murder, Lee, Denise's downstairs neighbor, reported to the police that he had seen a man downstairs on the second floor and told them there was an aluminum ladder up the wall and to the balcony. A week after the murder, Lee saw the individual that was by the ladder again in the apartment complex. Lee called Detective Gay, who came over to his apartments to search for the individual. Lee and Deputy Gay were unsuccessful in finding the individual at that time. It wasn't a totally unsuccessful trip, though. Deputy Gay showed Lee pictures of men that matched the description at the apartment complex, and that's when they made the possible match. Lee saw in profile the man who stood by the ladder that night. Later that evening, Deputy Gay received a call from Lee about having seen the individual again. After receiving the call, he went back to the Carousel Apartments. Deputy Gay made contact with Lee, and immediately Lee pointed to a black male individual who was watching the apartment complex. Deputy Gay questioned complex management as to whether there were ladders in the complex. The management stated that there was an aluminum ladder in the third floor storage room. According to the deputy, the ladder is indistinctive in that it has a bent foot. This unique feature matches the impression in the ground found under the balcony of the victim's apartment. Returning to the department, Deputy Gay received news that excluded at least one suspect. Earlier that day, he called in investigative leads to either include or exclude Denise's ex, Gary. That included a DNA test performed on him. Deputy Gay was informed that the DNA test excluded Gary as being a possible suspect in this case. Now it was the remaining suspect, the person that Lee identified at the apartment complex, and his name is Darius Kimbrough. Listener, I've always wanted to learn Spanish. Some of my favorite books are in the language, and a lot of my best friends speak it. That's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language. I've been using it, and I'm shocked by how quickly I'm learning. It's an intuitive process. You see, with Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally. First with words, then phrases, then sentences. And it's designed for the long term. meaning that with Rosetta Stone, you're going to retain what you learn. It's been used as a trusted expert for 30 years, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, Obscura listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life goes fast. I find it important to take a moment to celebrate your wins. Lately, I've just been happy with the state of the podcast. I've been hitting every goal I set. Listener, therapy can help you take stock of your progress and set achievable goals for the future. I know I've used therapy to orient myself and set realistic expectations for what I can achieve. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Take a moment. Visit BetterHelp.com/obscura today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/obscura. Obscura is supported by Incogni. Listener, do you know how easy it is for someone to access your information? Let me ask you something. When is the last time you plugged your name into a search engine? You might be surprised by what turns up. And I know I was. The disturbing conclusion I came to, that there was far more of my information available from a quick search that I'm comfortable with. You see, our data is bought and sold before we even understand why. We were giving away our email address and phone numbers to every store or website that asked. These data brokers aggregate your personal information, including your names and aliases, social security number, login credentials, home address, location history, online activity, and much, much more. All of this is available for purchase by businesses and can fall into the hands of criminals. And that there is the problem. The number of victims in these data breaches have skyrocketed, jumping up by 41% since 2021. Just as an example, you ever get slammed by spam robocalls? Well, now you know why. The good news is that you have the right to protect your privacy and request data brokers delete the information they hold about you. The bad news is that it would take you years to do it manually, just once, and you'd need to repeat the process every few months as data brokers continue collecting your data and creating new records. That's where Incogni comes in. They're here to do the heavy lifting and give you a way to regain control of your data. Head over to incogni.com and see what I mean. That's INCOGNI.com, incogni.com. Darius was born on December 4th, 1972. He moved around a lot as a kid, and his father wasn't very active in his life. When his father was around, he was an angry alcoholic. According to Darius, he had an abusive upbringing, full of beatings and neglect. And his mother didn't particularly care. One of the few bright spots in his life was his ability to sing. It acted as a sort of escape for the young man. One day, a criminal psychologist will diagnose Darius as a scale 4 sociopath. Marianne Hildreth, a microanalyst, compared pubic hairs on the victim's bedsheets with the pubic hair of Darius, and concluded that 3 of the pubic hairs found at the crime scene were microscopically similar. David Baer, senior crime lab analyst in the Florida Department of Law Enforcement Crime Laboratory in Orlando, performed the extraction procedure for DNA testing. The procedure was on blood samples from Darius. Cuttings from the bedsheets, vaginal swabs, and blood samples from the victim. Bayer then developed X-ray films that showed the end results of the DNA testing process. The X-ray film showed one lane, which was the female fraction from the vaginal swabs, which contained material from the vaginal fluids of the victim. The next lane is the male fraction, of which contained sperm from the vaginal swab. The next lane was a blood sample taken from the victim, and the lane after that is a blood sample taken from Darius. Listener, they had a match. According to Bayer, the results of the two probes that were used on the DNA found in the vaginal swab and the same two probes used on the sperm samples found on the bed sheets matched. Also, according to Bayer, after he confirmed a visual match on the AutoRad testing, he submitted the AutoRad to computer sizing. According to this computer sizing, the match of the bands were within an acceptable range of accuracy. The probability that someone other than Darius matching the five probes from the evidence sample was 1 out of every 140 million. Forensic pathologist Dr. Hegart found that the victim had a fractured jaw, an extensive fracturing down both the left and right side of the head, a massive fracture found in the area of the temple, likely leading to temporary loss of consciousness. According to Dr. Hegart, the cause of death was hemorrhaging, an injury to the brain including bleeding and swelling, that resulted from blunt force injury to the face and to the head of the victim. Dr. Hegart also examined the vaginal area of the victim. There was an area of contusion or reddening on the right side of the inner lips of the genitalia, and there were two areas of superficial tear of the genitalia membrane. The injuries to the vaginal area were consistent with having been made by an erect male penis. These injuries to the vagina would have caused severe pain. The doctor also testified that the victim's arms and forearms had bruises, scrapes, and cuts that were consistent with someone grabbing and holding her down. The doctor concluded that there were at minimum three massive blows to the face and head of the victim, but believed that there was evidence to support much more than that. Darius Mark Kimbrough was charged by indictment for the offense of murder in the first degree, burglary of a dwelling with intent to commit sexual battery, and sexual battery with great force. He pleaded not guilty. Mr. Kimbrough's case proceeded to a jury trial on June 27, 1994, in the Circuit Court of the 9th Judicial Circuit in and for Orange County, Florida. He was represented by Kelly Sims and Patricia Cashman of the Orange County Public Defender's Office. The state was represented by Jeffrey Ashton and Ted Cullahan of the Orange County State Attorney's Office. Darius' trial didn't go well for him. His defense team argued that it was Denise's ex-boyfriend Gary that killed her. But that didn't hold up, listener. Gary had an alibi and a mutual friend of Denise. He was DNA cleared, and he didn't have a history of violence. Darius, on the other hand, was tied conclusively to DNA evidence, making clear he was a match. And perhaps most damning, he left another victim alive. Do you remember the intro of the episode? Well, Heather Claypool had her revenge against her rapist in court, and she served bravely as the final nail in his coffin. The jury didn't take long to deliberate, and the trial court followed the jury recommendation and sentenced Mr. Kimbrough to death with two concurrent life terms for the other charges. November 12, 2013. Darius Kimbrough's last meal consisted of two slices of pizza, fried green tomatoes, fried chicken, chicken gizzards, chocolate chip ice cream, and fruit punch. He ate most of that. He spoke with family and even visited a chaplain. The 40-year-old was asked if he had any final statements, if he wanted to apologize. Darius declined. And as they injected him with the chemicals that would take his life, Darius only blinked. Sitting there, emotionless, At 6:18 p.m., a doctor shone a light in his eyes, checked his pulse, and then he was pronounced dead. Outside, Denise's mother, Diane, who watched Darius die, was interviewed. She said that she felt his death was too peaceful and that he deserved much worse. And so ends the life of a monster, a dark figure who climbed through windows and crept through glass doors, crouching through the apartments of unsuspecting women and making their worst fears come true. Forgive me if I shed no tears for his execution. I personally believe that more women were raped. Back then, it was even harder for women to come forward. Denise Collins was born on May 8, 1963, in Morgantown, West Virginia, and died at age 28 years old on October 3, 1991. She was an aspiring artist at the time of her death. She loved cats and was described as big-hearted, and that she had a very pleasing personality and was outgoing and laid back. I thank you for listening, and keep the fire burning.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.